pumpkin pie.
Webcasting to the world.
Do you remember the moment you saw yourself and God and God and you, and you were one with the universe and God and everybody?
Knowing the truth about the gospel.
You were one with the prostitutes and pimps and priests and kings, and there was nobody on earth that was better than you nor less than you.
That we are all righteous.
And no one on earth was any less in Christ than anyone else.
That's Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for the 4th of December, 2014. The podcast that tells you how to think, not what to think. We're coming to you today from the spit-polished GR Studios right here in Nashville, Tennessee. We're with Wolf. We're with Rolf. Rolf, 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 Rolf.
This show's gone to the dogs.
Who let the dogs out?
We're with Ralph Waldo Emerson. We say, I like the silence of a church before the service begins, better than any preaching. And here from deep in the heart of Texas, once again, the founder and president of the Gospel Revolution, Mr. Michael Williams. G'day, Mike.
G'day, mate.
It is a. It's one of those dour days up here. It's like nature's saying, I can also frown, you know. I don't have to cry, but I can frown a lot. And it's just one of those days up here. How's it down there? I guess you're wondering
you
what...
Know. Pretty much the same. It is the air is almost thick. The clouds seem to be almost touching the ground. And you would think it was misting rain, but it's not. And it's just one of those, yeah.
How was Thanksgiving, Michael?
Me and Boston Market. We did fine. I went through the drive-through, and well, actually, their drive-through's closed on Thanksgiving, so you have to get out because they have so many people that Boston Market prepares their entire Thanksgiving family dinners. So people are going in and getting these huge boxes of prepared food, and so yeah, it's
Michael. Let me get this straight. Not only did you go to a fast food outlet, but you actually tried to go through the drive-in section.
Oh yes,
for Thanksgiving.
I was really ticked off that they were closed, and I had to get out of my car and go get it.
So. Well, there's always McDonald's or KFC or something, isn't there?
Yes. But it was a good Thanksgiving. I had a handful of very pleasant phone calls, and but it's the way life is for me here in Houston. I live here by myself. I have no family that lives here.
Oh.
And nobody likes me, so
I just. Hey, December 4th, mate. It's only five weeks or so till we're in Calgary.
Oh, my goodness, yes. Here we are, and here comes Calgary, and boy, am I looking forward to it. A lot of our folks in Calgary that come to the meeting just do not listen to the PowerCast. And they are some of our largest supporters, so I don't know if bringing you up there is going to be a good thing or not. We might lose some support. I don't know.
Look, I don't even know what to say to that.
But we're going to venture the possibilities. No, of course, the folks there are going to enjoy it. I'm going to enjoy it because I know the topics that we're going to cover, and I think they're going to be very good.
You going to tell us what you're teaching on?
We did the because the folks in Calgary don't listen, and because we need to have the things that we do recorded on CD, you know, we did the five things that Paul said had been fulfilled, the five mysteries that Paul said had been fulfilled. But we did that on a PowerCast, and I've not done that on CD or in a session. So I'm thinking that I'm going to probably cover that territory.
Don't they even have computers?
I don't know what it is. These people, a lot of them just never got into computers very much. So it's not that they are choosing not to watch the show. Now, Bernice Ramsdenwood, who's been with us there for many years and was the very heartbeat of the Gospel Revolution in Canada. And she listens all the time because I talk to others who don't listen, actually, who have been supporters, and they still don't listen. And they were talking to Bernice, and she was telling them, man, says it just you just wouldn't believe the PowerCast. We had just finished the series on Seven Pillars of Wisdom, and she was telling them, you know, it's so fantastic. It's just so encouraging, and it helps you to know why we believe what we believe. And so the one I was talking to, he said, that's nice. He said, I'll have to check that out. So it's like, goodness gracious.
Well, Bernice,
these are not people who've listened to us and said, so-so, and then gone their way. They just haven't listened at all. They've just never connected it.
Bernice, did you say?
Bernice and Al Ramson would.
Bernice, mate, you just keep hammering them up there. You're doing a great job. In fact, did we ever give you your pharyngectomy certificate? I think you deserve a pharyngectomy certificate, Bernice.
If anyone does, Bernice does, that's for sure. In fact, you need to do an interview with Bernice. My goodness.
All right.
She is chock full of history for the gospel revolution. It really is a wonderful story. They were a part of when I was still speaking in the churches there and packing out buildings. You know, I guess the best way for me to describe that for people so they'll know what I'm saying is we were in the Joseph Prince phase of the gospel revolution.
Now, you mentioned this last week, and I had to cut it out because of time, but just tell us quickly what that meant.
Well, that's the period of time that I was sharing on grace and peace, but we were only giving this gracious grace and this gospel of peace. Now, the gospel of peace, I was teaching that God wasn't angry with anybody, but I was teaching that grace and not by works was for the believer until I finally realized that believing in itself is work, which became the big debate at the time.
Well, did you discover that, or is it something that you read that put your eyes to that, or what?
Yes, well, that's the thing of it was, as Bears, is the one-liner. You know, Jesus was good at those one-liners.
He would have made one of the best comedians, I reckon.
He was excellent at one-liners. I'm not sure people would laugh every time that he said his one-liners that cover their head and wait for the wrath of God, more than likely. Jesus called believing a work. He said, if you're going to do the work, you got to do the work that's the work of God, and that's belief.
So you were in this phase, in this, what did you call it, Joseph Prince phase?
The Joseph Prince phase, because that's where Joseph has stayed. That was where I started getting...
Well, that's where the money is, wealthy. Mate.
Oh, my gosh.
Our young Joey's no idiot.
Man, I'm telling you, the money and the popularity just exploded on me, and Christians were very glad to find out they were not under the law. They were very glad to find out that the only thing indeed they had to do was believe, and that promises didn't come. One of the churches that I got kicked out of in Tulsa by Bob Yandian, who was one of the top teachers in the development and establishment phase of Rhema Bible Training Center. So he now had a church, and there was, you know, a couple thousand people or so there. I don't remember. But I got up, and I remember, goodness gracious, we drove around in Yandian's vintage vet, and, you know, was having a good time there. Not like I wasn't in communication with him. Sometimes you go to speak someplace and you're just a speaker, but that wasn't the case here with Bob Yandian. And I stood up, and after we had discussed it, a lot of times with these pastors, what I would do is I would discuss the material before, when I knew that it was in such a critical situation, and I knew that it was going to be contrary to their doctrine. And I would have the discussion. I wouldn't say, now this is what I'm going to say. I would kind of field it with them and see what their response was. And I did, And he had no response to it, no negative response anyway. So I got up in the church and I started teaching that day, and I told them that the promises of God did not come because of anything, that we did not have to do anything to receive the promises of God. And oh my gosh, he was threatening down to shut down the rest of the meetings for the week. I was speaking on Sunday and Monday or something like that. So now Yandian did pull me aside. Now in so many cases, nobody ever said anything to me. They just axed me, and that was it. So he let me know he was very upset about it, and was considering not having the next meeting. The problem was is that they were selling more tapes from my sessions that I was doing than they'd ever sold in any sessions.
There was money in this little thing.
Oh, so they didn't know what to do, and the tape sales were great, but he wasn't sure he wanted the congregation to hear what I was saying. And I just apologized profusely because I never had the intent to cause disruption. I knew that sharing the truth would, in one of the results of sharing the truth sometime, is disruption to a lot of things. And especially church. So I told him, I said, you know, I will correct it. I said, you're the pastor here. I'll encourage the people to listen to your opinion on this, and I will ask them to pardon me for bringing up a subject that I, in view of the church's stand on these things, that I shouldn't have brought up. And so I did. And he... After that session, which was just, it was over the top, and the people's response was just incredible. They looked at me kind of confused when I was apologizing for saying those things in that church, and it was like, no, don't apologize. That's the thing that set us free the most.
Yeah.
So it was really quite amazing. And so I remember being in the aisle in front of the altar, you know, down on the people level there. And Bob and I were both greeting people. And he said, Mike, he says, don't worry about this. Don't worry about this. He said, this is nothing. This was nothing at all. He said, I want you to know I definitely have you back. I definitely want you to come back. And then immediately after that is when he and Marilyn Hickey and some others teamed up to begin to hurl accusations of all kinds.
Now, is this Bob Yandian of Grace Church out in Broken Arrow, Oklahoma?
It is Bob Yandian of Grace Church.
Oh, well, that makes suddenly – I wish you'd said that earlier. Suddenly this makes sense, because that's the same Bob Yandian that failed to report the allegations of child abuse. I mean, you know, rape of minors and stuff, you know. Well, it's not that important, not in you know, the religious...
Well, as long as it's male on female, you know, it's not as bad as...
Oh, yes. Oh, who was that? Know, that was that idiot... That was that idiot minister for ethics in Uganda, wasn't it?
And you know, that really is, Bears, I'm telling you, that really is the way people think. That pedophilia... At least it's male on female, or vice versa, and anything's better than two adult males or two adult females making a conscious decision as to what they're going to do together. Oh, it's far better than that. Oh, believe me. I didn't know that about Bobby Indian's church. I'm just so removed from all of that now.
Just for our listeners, I am reading from thislandpress.com, roundups. /Oklahoma-children's-disgraced/. We don't make this stuff up, family. You couldn't make this stuff up. Honest to God, you couldn't make this stuff up. These people who are in Christian leadership, let's face it, tell me what other business in America you could be in where you are sheltered from the IRS, you don't pay taxes, where you can rape minors, and nothing happens, where you can preach whatever you want to preach and drag in all the money you like, and you just can keep doing it. There's no end in sight. What? Tell me one, unless it's banking on Wall Street, I mean, what business, and nothing beats it. You drag me out of here, will you, mate, before I... That's right, we're in Calgary in 4 weeks. What are you preaching on anyway? You're preaching on you're teaching on the things that Paul said ended at the cross? Is that what you're teaching on?
Yes. Yeah, I think I want to get that on CD. Like I said, the only ones who've heard that are listeners who have who were on the PowerCast. And as obviously, we do have a lot of people that we have people in other countries that listen more than some of the folks in the U.S. and Canada to the PowerCast. But we do need this on CD. We have to cover these materials and get them out in every possible venue that we can or ever possible meet.
Put it in the paper. Did you write it down in stone? Did you send a short text message or fax it from your home? Did you put it in a billboard? Make a little sign. Email or do Facebook. Anyway is fine. Gotta get out the gospel. Gotta get out the gospel.
Now, our first story this week comes from, Houston, Texas.
Right from here in Houston.
Right there. And I'm just going to let them, I'll just give you a little bit of an intro. A Houston pastor refuses to bury a 93-year-old woman who didn't tithe when she was in a coma. Bad woman. I mean, what a fool woman. And he says that she'd been a member of his church 50 years, but had not tithed enough as her death came close by. She didn't tithe enough as she was ready to die. Now, this is, I think, the Fourth Missionary Baptist Church in Houston. Do you know that one, mate?
No, I don't know the first one, second one, or the third one either.
Well, anyway, here is the here's the story.
Have a listen. This is tragic.
Tragic? No, it's not. It's amusing. It's amazing that it's amazing and amusing. It never ceases to amaze me how people will keep going back to the animals that are biting them. Have a listen to this.
Well, a Houston family is angry after being told that its 93-year-old matriarch will not be buried by their home church. That family spoke with Fox 26, expressing both outrage and disappointment because of that. Fox 26's Isaiah Carey is live in the newsroom with The Factor Uncensored. Isaiah?
Well, Katie, we know the Bible tells us to give back to our place of worship. It's a common practice, almost expected. But should we be made to suffer if we don't give that 10% to the church or the man in the pulpit? One local woman says she had to peddle her mother's bodies from church to church to funeralize her because her home church absolutely would not.
Because it was like the last insult in the world. There was nothing else that I could do for my mommy but funeralize her in a church that she loved and worshipped all of her life, even as a little girl.
Barbara Day is understandably angry. She says her 93-year-old mother, Olivia Blair, died more than a week ago. Day says when she went to the church her mother has called home for 50 years, Fourth Missionary Baptist, to ask if the singer's funeral could be held there, she says she was told absolutely not by the pastor.
That she had not paid her dues and she had not attended the church in recent years, that they did not owe it to her. That he did not say we didn't owe it to her, but he said it was because of the dues and not attending the church. For the last 2 years, my mother has been in either a nursing home or she's been in a hospital. In the last few months, she was in a coma.
Day says her stepfather was buried at the church and her mother was a diehard supporter of Reverend Walter Houston at the church on Webster. That's why she can't believe the religious leader turned her down flat when it came to her mother's funeral.
there's no explanation for anybody that has been paying dues for a church that long for him to make me have to roll my mother's body around town, and somebody finally picks her up and say, yeah, we'll do the best we can. They knew she was ill. They don't care. All they care about is getting money, 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 money. Even retail stores give people more respect than that. I don't understand why we've become so commercialized with religion. What does this have to do with God? Why can't I give my mother her last wish to be funeralized in a church that she loves so much?
And that is Barbara Day, understandably upset. Now, joining us is Tyrone Jobs. Yes. You are the owner, publisher of PimpPreacher.com,
That's correct. Better known as TJ. Yes.
You first broke this story on your website. You reached out to us here in Houston.
Yes.
It actually got you on the road from New Orleans to Houston because this was so egregious to you.
Yes.
What did you think about it?
Well, we were contacted last week, and when we encountered this story, we couldn't believe it. And it was, it really, my whole entire organization at PimpPreacher.com, you know, was upset about it. This is primarily what we do. We deal with pastor accountability issues. So when we came across a pastor refusing to bury a member who had been a member for 50 years because of a tithing issue.
Money.
Because of the money. Dues, whatever they want to call it. Membership fees for a church. It caused us to drive over here. And I pleaded with this pastor. I pleaded with him all day Sunday. Last week I said, look, hey, can you please reconsider? Please reconsider.
Walter Houston, and he absolutely
said absolutely not. He said he didn't want to apologize to the other families.
Now, also, I had a chance to speak with him this afternoon, and he said that this was about, she was no longer a member. She wasn't a member for 10 years, and she did not support the church financially.
Right.
Her daughter, Barbara Day, says that's not true.
It's not true at all.
She left the church maybe 2 years ago when she became ill and was always dedicated, never went to another church.
Right. That's correct. And it's also important to note, because I asked the pastor, I said, well, why didn't someone go check on her? Why didn't someone go to reach out to her? And his reply to me, it was up to the family to notify him. And the comment that really set us off was, if the family cared so much, why didn't they at least send a dollar to the church a week to reserve her membership?
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
Once again, we did reach out to Pastor Walter Houston to go on camera several times and extended him an invitation here on The Factor, and he declined.
Bonehead of the day.
Mike, there was just so many things wrong with this. It's paying the dues, apparently, according to one of these newsmen. It's paying your dues. According to the Bible, you've got to pay your dues, you heard him say earlier.
Dues. Wow.
On his website, TJ noted that he'd offered to pay for the funeral and to have it on a day when the church was already closed. Sir, even though your church is closed on Friday and I have offered to pay the cost to have this funeral in your church, you're still refusing to allow this funeral for a member who has been a part of your ministry for 50 years. And here is what that pastor said. Membership has its privileges. And I'm reading from the news. I'm reading from the newspaper here. Membership has its... Of course it does. It protects idiots and boneheads like you.
That's American Express's logo. Did you know that?
Oh, what is?
Membership has its privileges. That is the slogan for American Express.
Well, Bob Yandian seems to think so, and obviously this idiot does too. I mean, there is just so much. Now, that clip is over 4 minutes, and every minute counts on this podcast, because we really, really try to get everything in a very short period of time. But the reason I played it in its totality, Michael, was because this is ignorance gone to seed on a whole bunch of different levels.
Yes. This is like everything that we've ever said about Christianity, and watch the whole thing bloom right in front of you. So there's pastors who would never do such a thing, thank goodness. But the fact of it is that there is a mentality there that justifies such actions. So much so to the point where that this pastor, even when confronted with the family, with outside people looking in, saying, and even with offering a chance before a funeral, please reconsider. Here's if this is what you need, then here we will accommodate what you need. But the issue for him was not what he said to this family about not burying their mother, but it was what he was communicating to the rest of the congregation.
The rest of the world.
Yes. You either pay or you can expect nothing from us outside of giving us money. And, man, I'm telling you, Mother Teresa would have got kicked out of this church.
I like what the lady's daughter said. She said, even retailers give you more respect than that. And but then, of course, honey, I'm sorry, but what else would that church be but a retail outlet?
Yep.
So once again, just to make sure that he knows who he is.
Bonehead of the day.
Gospel Revolution.
Today, our first question comes from an eager listener. Oh, that's me. I figured I'd ask the question. Well, I don't know. I don't ever listen after I've produced this thing. I don't ever listen. I've listened to it for about 15 hours. I don't need to listen to it anymore. Hey, listen, mate, I've got a question. And I reached out to quite a few friends this week to ask them this question. And none of them were able to answer this in a way that seemed to defend the major opinion of Christianity. And here was the question. If the early church fathers were not infallible, then why was their choice of what the Bible should consist of infallible? In other words, no one wants to claim that the early church fathers were infallible, but they do want to claim that their choice, even if it was a choice, it was forced on them by a pagan pedophile Roman emperor, but they want to insist that their choices were infallible. Now, is this not, Michael, what we fight against with Roman Catholicism, or what's called papal infallibility? Is there any difference here?
Honestly, there isn't, and it is, until you pointed out to me, I'd never drawn that comparison between the fact that we certainly would never given the different people who were in charge of canonizing the New Testament the position of any type of infallibility, yet their work was infallible. I'd never, ever heard it put that way before. But it is quite amazing that we are capable of doing that. And not only are they not infallible, but under the conditions even that you said were existing at the time. The best I understand, this canonization of the New Testament took place almost over a 400-year period of time. It seemed, I remember looking at a chart of it, this has been years ago that I studied the canonization process. It seemed like every 125 years, they went back and had another meeting and decided to add another book or another thing. And I remember there was a different man who was in charge of each one of these revampings and acceptings of canonization. But the best I know, it took place over almost a 400-year period of time.
That would be the formalization. Canonization happened in 1580, 1568, 1580, and it only happened when the Catholic Church said, we really have to formalize what's in this Bible, because these Protestant reformers are saying, yeah, they're calling us the Antichrist, and they're saying that the Bible that we hold here with the Apocrypha is not real. And so that was when the only canonization of the Scriptures occurred. Now, when I say the only canonization, the Protestants, after they stripped themselves away from Roman Catholicism, just went along with it and said, "Ah, what the heck? Yeah, let's agree." So all Protestant denominations actually agree with Roman Catholicism in that these are the books of the Bible. Now, what you're talking about, and it's a really, really good point, because nothing changed. Nothing changed from the late 300s all the way through to 1585.
The view that the Gospel Revolution has taken on this really is unique to the Gospel Revolution, as far as I've been able to tell. These were not easy decisions, and it didn't come to them quickly either, and especially this one about the Scriptures. This was the one where that my question that was in my heart was about the swing that I was seeing between a generation of legalists who almost taught nothing but the law, and then their children and grandchildren looking and saying, hey, wait a minute, for by grace are you saved through faith. It's not by works. I mean, because they just virtually never taught on those verses at all. And then you had a whole generation that became enlivened to grace. So they teach their children grace and grace and grace. But there's something about a new generation. They want to have discovery on their own.
So the pendulum swings from one extreme to the other?
And yes, so then here they look and they say, oh my goodness, look what it says here. Faith without works is dead. Oh my gosh. Look, mom and dad in the church didn't teach us this. And so suddenly there's this revitalization of legalism. So it's been a swinging pendulum for all of these 2,000 years like crazy. My heart's question, Barris, was how do we stop that? Because right when people begin to learn grace, the next generation falls headlong back into legalism. And this was what the answers that came to my heart was this issue about the scriptures, is that because each generation was correct. I think it's one of the most shocking things that I've ever had come out of my mouth. And that is to say that both Christianity and the gospel are both in the New Testament. They're both there. It's not like we are proving, and I don't know, and again, this is exclusive to the gospel revolution. We're not trying to prove that the New Testament does not say what Christians believe. Let me make this very clear. The New Testament does say what Christianity believes. It is in there. And as you brought out so clearly, just in the book of Revelation, my gosh, talk about a swing to absolute legalism and no grace whatsoever. Nothing but works.
We've got a question about that this week.
You may be wondering what's going on. You heard what Michael said, is that right or wrong? Don't be shy now, pick up the phone, call. Questions are the lifeblood flowing through the veins of the gospel revolution. Questions are the lifeblood flowing through the veins of the gospel revolution. Questions are the lifeblood flowing through the veins of the gospel revolution.
I'm jumping down the running sheet here, mate, but it's probably a good time to do it. Danny, Roger, you just have to wait. Got this letter from PVIG. That was his name, PVIG. It's Paul, actually, over in England. England swings like a pendulum do. Hi, Mike, Barris, and Jeff. Thank you for your excellent PowerCast on 13 November. One thing puzzles me, though, and I hope you can help. Now, he's referring to our the PowerCast where we dealt, I think, with the seven churches.
Mm-hmm.
He says, am I right in thinking that John was telling the churches in Asia to reject Paul's teaching and to go back to the law? If so, why does the first verse of Revelation 1 say that what is written in the book of Revelation was given to John by an angel and is a record of what God told Jesus? Surely God would not have told Jesus that the churches in Asia needed to go back to the law?
This is excellent.
It is, isn't it? Well, actually, and I'm just going to throw this out, Paul, maybe Jesus didn't even know that there were any churches in Asia. Do you think there were any churches in Asia when Jesus was around? Okay, his last sentence is, is the book of Revelation merely John's opinions? Thank you, Paul, in England.
Well, and I'm going to have you address this, Barris. Of course, this was something that you brought to us. But the one thing that I know, Paul knows, you know, God knows, everybody in Christendom knows, everybody in any religion knows, is this one thing. If you want to get your point across, invoke the name of God. God told me. Jesus told me. I had a dream. I got a revelation. Do you know how many quacks we got running around today that are running around telling people they visited heaven and they've, you know, visited hell? Goodness gracious, they visited every place except the Vatican, it seems. The best way in the world to validate what you're saying is say, God told me, an angel told me, you know, this is what an angel did. Just because a man says those things doesn't mean that's what happened.
I like that. That's good. I was just looking up one word here. Well, Paul, I'd second everything that Michael just said. Plus, I'd make another couple of comments. Number one, the word angel that is used in Revelation 1:1, you said in your letter, why does the first verse of Revelation 1 say what is written in the book of Revelation was given to John by an angel and is a record of what God told Jesus?
This is good.
Well, the first thing that's important to note is that the word angel simply means messenger.
Exactly.
Now, the prophets prophesied that there would be a messenger to make straight the way of the Lord, talking about John the Baptist. He was called an angel. And Jesus even quoted that himself, that John was an angel. Now, we know that John wasn't an angel. His head was sitting on a plate. That's pretty unusual for angels. So the word angelos simply means a messenger. Now, who was the messenger that John got this from? There's the interesting question. Could the messenger have been Jesus himself? So we know that this was something that was given to Jesus by his father, a message given to Jesus by his father about things which would surely happen to him. And now over the last year, I suppose, we've uncovered at least three or four different examples in the New Testament of where the disciples themselves, the apostles, and these are the apostles, Paul. These are not the B apostles or the C or the D apostles. They might have been the disciples, but they were the apostles. And they misquoted the Old Testament. They misquoted the prophets when they said something. Even Paul did it. And they misquoted what the prophets said. Now, question, could it be that John also misquoted what Jesus said? Could it have been that, say, and I'm just, this is only my postulation, nobody can say this for sure, or nobody can deny it for sure. So Jesus is on the Mount of Transfiguration. Something special happens there. We don't really know what it was, except that a couple of the apostles kind of got it a little bit wrong and wanted to set up shop there and hang out their brass plaque over the door and invite everybody in to observe the king and his two right-hand henchmen. But all we know is that something special happened. Could it have been that God told Jesus then? Could it have been that when Jesus was fasting for 40 days in the wilderness before Satan came to him, could it have been, because it does say an angel ministered to him, in that situation, could it have been then that at the beginning of his ministry, God told Jesus, now here is your GPS for the next 3.5 years. Good luck, fella. You know I'm with you, and when you die, I am going to raise you. All we know is that this was something that God told Jesus about things which would shortly come to pass. It had to happen after he was told. Now, we presume that it has to happen after now. There is no logic underlying that conclusion. John suggested it should be something that would happen after he wrote it. There is no logic underlying that conclusion. Remember, he's writing this 60 years after Jesus has talked about it. So Jesus gets this, let's say, in the wilderness from his father. And let's say sometime he shares this with his disciples. 60 years later, John is writing down his recollection of that. Now, I got some serious questions about that, and I'm pretty sure that anyone listening to this can beat me to actually verbalizing them. Yeah, 60 years later, the man's an old man. He's in his 90s, or at least he's in his maybe 70s. So let me answer your question as directly as I can now. Is the book of Revelation merely John's opinions? In my opinion, yes. In my opinion, it is not even John's opinions. In my opinion, it is John's 60-year-old recollections. Remember, and see, here is the trick. John is probably as young as 14 years old when he's a disciple of Jesus. That puts him at 74 when he's writing this.
Yeah.
How many 74-year-olds do you know?
Questions are the lifeblood flowing through the veins of the gospel revolution.
Oh, hey, I think we've answered the question, haven't we, Michael?
I think so.
Okay.
We'll let Paul decide if we've answered it or not.
Yeah, good point, Paul. Now, be like Danny Rogers. Now, he's a flea in our ears, I tell you.
I know, what a nuisance.
But he gets some of the best stuff out of us that anyone in the Gospel Revolution gets out. So be like him. Paul, if we didn't answer the question sufficiently, push us further, because questions are...
the lifeblood of the Gospel Revolution.
Danny Rogers writes, "Hello, Barris, it's me again, Danny."
Reminds me of one of the old comedians had this skit that he would do where he was calling this woman with these unwanted calls. And so she'd answer the phone. He'd say, "Hello, it's me again."
It's me. Oh, Ray, Randy French is going to love you. That was Ray Stevens.
Oh, yes, that's right.
It's me again, Margaret.
So now that we've slandered Danny's name and we've mocked him and made fun of him as one of the supporters of the Gospel Revolution.
Oh, does he give us money?
Well, of course he does.
Oh, Danny, when it comes time to be buried, we'll be there, mate.
We'll bury you.
You can come to the...
You sound a little bit too anxious there, Barris.
Well, I would have a lot I would have a lot less work to do if Danny wasn't around. So anyway, here he says, "Hello, Barris, it's me again. I would like to ask another question. What was the reason for God to impute righteousness to Abraham or into Abraham? Romans 4 verse 3. Let me look it up, Danny. I'm not as quick as you, mate. And Romans 4 verse 3 says, "For what says the scripture? Abraham believed God and it was counted unto him for righteousness." Romans 4 verse 3 seems to imply it was due to Abraham's belief. Can you and Mike expand on Abraham's imputed righteousness? Thanks so much for being here for us all. Your friend in the gospel, Danny Rogers.
This is Danny Rogers. So, yeah, all of those bad things we said about Danny, we got to take back because it's the other Danny we were talking about.
Oh, it was always the other Danny. But the other Danny doesn't give us any money. We're not going to bury him, I'm pretty sure.
Well, I think he does, actually. So.
Well, hang on. We had three Dannys last week. It might have been the other one.
It could have been. Anyway, we're grateful for all of our Dannys. They let us give them a hard time. So we'll have to add a chapter of Danny to the next canonization of the New Testament that we do. So.
I love it. And if you could all die at once, it would make it easy. We could do a triplet burial here.
No, we couldn't. We couldn't afford it then. So, but no, this is, again, an excellent question. The thing we have to remember about the scriptures is it's all about types and shadows of that which was coming. Now, the thing we know about faith, the wonderful thing about looking back is that we already have forward has been revealed. So, we know how sculpted it is to find point that Paul's teaching about that it's the faith of God. It's not our faith. It is the faith of God. But see, when you talk about Abraham, you're talking about a type and shadow of God himself. Abraham in the scriptures is a type and shadow of God, the Father Abraham, if you will. So being that he is that type and shadow, it is implying that it is by the faith of God himself. So even though Abraham was this human being, it is the type and shadow that comes out of the entire understanding about Abraham that points us once again to the faith of God. Righteousness does require faith. We've never, ever advocated that faith is not absolutely required by the scriptures in connection with being made righteous. Our debate with Christianity is that it is the faith of God, not the faith of man. And this very comparison about righteousness being imputed is within the context of Abraham and his faith, God's faith being instrumental again, once again, and in this type and shadow of righteousness being imputed by faith to Abraham, who is a type and shadow of God himself.
Is that it?
I don't have nothing else to say.
Can I add something?
Please.
We got nothing to add.
Okay. I did that good.
Again, Danny, Rasselas, if we didn't answer that completely. And Danny, we love your questions. We love your questions because...
We love our Dannys. Questions are the lifeblood of the gospel. We might as well say Danny's are the lifeblood of the gospel revolution anymore, you know?
They're getting close to it these last few broadcasts, yeah.
Could this be madness? What did you hear? What you heard might not be perfectly clear. Take a stand, now we'll be right here. Call questions are the lifeblood flowing through the veins of the gospel revolution. Questions are the lifeblood flowing through the veins of the gospel revolution.
Gospel revolution.
Hey, now, here I got an email from Bola, and I know Bola must think that I just don't
Are you ignoring Bola?
I haven't been ignoring Bola, but my Gmail has been, and I don't. But I did catch this one. I went back today to find all the ones that I missed, and I found this one. So, sorry, Bala. Dear Beres, I'm not sure this is a question. It's more like a thought, so here goes. Well, we'll think about it with you, Bala. If you believed in something without a shred of evidence, then you can stop believing the same without a shred of evidence. Illusions and wild imaginations should not be allowed beyond the realm of entertainment. I never would have known the Holy Spirit, Moses, or Jesus if it were not for religion. But none of that would have any bearing whatsoever on my honesty. By being honest, I have no doubt we can attain to love, just as with the gospel and all the Bible characters. I really have nothing but good to say about the gospel. It's a far better cry than traditional religion, and it surely started me on the way out of that maze. If I met somebody today that knew nothing of Moses, Jesus, the cross, and religion, I think I'd just focus on honesty as a means to help reveal that who they are equals with the rest of humanity. That is a great reason for us all to be kind and, above all, love one another. Bala and I have had a discussion once or twice, more than once or twice actually, about believing, knowledge, love, and the like. Now, Bala has at the moment he's working through this understanding of do I need belief or don't I need belief? And I'm going to put this in a box, and if I'm wrong, please write me and castigate me and let us make it straight again. But where he talks about knowledge is a fact. I mean, I know that when a light is red, I better not go through it or I could die. That's knowledge. Belief, I'm going to go with, Bola, that when you talk about belief, what you're talking about is the faith statements of different religious organizations or a fixed paradigm or a fixed worldview, a fixed belief system, which causes me to follow that above even common sense, if you like, at times, or anything else for that matter. The faith kind of a deal with belief. When you talk about love and honesty, here is what I keep coming back to in my own thinking. The things that are the most important in humanity, in the life of humanity, the things that are most important in the life of humanity are all invisible. I don't give a rat's what you say about anything else. They're all invisible. If I asked you what you valued and prized above anything else, you would say, I prize love. As you've already said, I prize honesty. I prize loyalty. I prize courage. I prize bravery. I prize faithfulness. And not one of those things are tangible, not one. There is something built into the heart of us. There is something which we have all been born with. Now, Michael chooses to say it this way. He says that we are all born righteous, holy, and perfect, and that we are all born with the innate knowledge of the truth, and what we need to do is be be busy about getting that out of us rather than getting a belief system into us. Now, and Michael will correct me in a minute if I got that wrong, but belief on the basis that you have described it, or on the basis that I have described what I think you mean by it, I'm with you, mate. I'm not very long on belief at all. I think the belief sucks. And see, here is the problem. In English, we have the word belief, we have the word faith, and yet the two are forensically different. In the Greek language, the word faith meant something I would hang my life on, something, a belief that I would hang my life on. Bowler, you have the belief that love and honesty are right up there above any belief. That's your belief. I get that. I honor that. I prize it. And that's exactly what the Greek says in the New Testament. It's something that you are ready to hang your life on. It's not belief as we know it in the English.
Yeah, exactly. I like the opening here. I think it's really quite revealing in the things that Bola may be dealing with right now. And not just Bola, but a lot of people. But it's, the statement in the very first part of this, if you've believed in something without a shred of evidence. Now, see, that is a problem. When you believe the gospel, you're not believing something without a shred of evidence. We have the scriptures that foretold all of this. There's never been the life of a man whose conception, birth, life, death, burial, and resurrection was foretold in some cases thousands of years before his birth. There are a lot of people who came into Christianity and never expected any evidence to be given to them. It was an emotional appeal. Now, this is really helping me because I have somewhat of an investigative mind. And the thing that pulled me in all the way to this, and I had that emotional experience, and I really disagree with the emotional appeal that Christianity has to make someone convert to believing, because that is usually without evidence. But the thing that intrigued me was and caused me to come in, headlong, was the fact that there was evidence of this. We had one of the oldest documents on planet Earth that foretold all of this. So I didn't come into this without a shred of evidence. Now, presuming that this statement is true of all Christians, then it's true. Then you can stop and should stop believing something without a shred of evidence. But just because Christians told us about the characters and players and events in the gospel doesn't mean they shared with us the truth of the gospel. So believing in the Holy Spirit and Moses and Jesus, we all know that there's many religions that use these names.
Now, when you say to believe that there's no evidence, are you saying to believe there's no evidence of the factuality of Moses' life or the prophet's life or the fact that things were written down which we believe were fulfilled in the life of Jesus? Are you saying that there is evidence?
What he's talking about here is to believe in this whole issue of the gospel is what I'm getting from it. The fact that there was a redemption, the fact that there was any of this stuff that took place. But there is evidence. So that's the first thing that I would say. And again, we're going to get into this in great detail in Calgary. Now, I mean, our Constitution here in America calls for the equality of all, that all people are created equal. But have you noticed that the declaration of our Constitution has not seemed to be able to get that point across to people's hearts? Now, we can change the laws to enforce that equality, but Bola, have you noticed that our Constitution has changed no one's heart? It has changed no one's heart to embrace that equality from their from the point from which they stand. So again, it is noble. It's the right thing to do. Goodness gracious! The wonder to me that this even made it into our Constitution is the only thing. It is the only thing that has caused this republic to survive. If you look at the challenges to it over the years, it's always been on this issue of equality. And I've said this many years ago, and I'll say it again. The time that America fails to address an issue of equality and fall on the right side of equality, that will be the beginning of the demise of this country, because that is what this is all supposedly based on, and I do believe it is based on it. The last thing that I want to comment about here on Bolo's letter, and I really do feel the heart of this, but Bolo, let me assure you, my friend, that if you focus on honesty only as a means to help reveal why we are equal with the rest of humanity. You see, the gospel does not reveal that we are just equal with each other in humanity. It reveals that we are equal with God.
Mm. Yeah, big plus.
You see, all of these people that you would convince that we are equal with each other, number one, they're never going to be convinced. Because the very thing that makes us one is not revealed to their minds and to their hearts. There's a catalyst that has to be involved for two things to come together. And we can stand and tell people until, you know, with love or with joy or with peace or a harmony or whatever, that everybody is equal. They're going to know on what basis are we equal. What is the common denominator? So if it's equal, what made it equal?
Mm.
So you can't have an equal sign and have an answer and not have the equation that led up to equal.
Can I just make sure I'm getting what you're saying there, Mike? A black man and a white man's intrinsic value are equal. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
And what you're saying is, somebody's going to come along and say, why?
Yes.
Well, what's the answer to that?
Well, the only answer I know, now I've looked at other answers, but the only one that I know is the gospel and this incredible union and fusion of God and man together.
Speaking in equations, if A equals C and B equals C, then A equals B. Is that a truism for you?
Yes.
So, if a white man equals God and a black man equals God, then a white man equals a black man. Is that right?
Exactly, yes.
Then God would be seem to me to be the common denominator. Is that what you're saying the gospel is teaching?
That is what the gospel is teaching, is that if you're going to resolve fractions, you have to have a common denominator. We already have one of the most incredible and one of the most valuable documents on the planet Earth that teaches equality, but it has not produced what it endorses, and that is that all men are created equal.
So are you saying that just because it exists doesn't mean that people get it, and that's the value of the gospel?
And that is the value of the gospel. And we can say equality and love and equality and love over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. But I am very persuaded that Paul's teachings about getting the mind renewed to that fact. The conclusion of his letter is just sharing equality, that we're all equal. That is a great reason for us all to be kind and above all love one another. It should be, but see, the thing of it is, Bola, is until you convince people they are equal, and that is the question I have, is what tool are you going to use to convince people that they are equal? what and when they bring those comparisons, when you point to the person who's living under the bridge and hasn't had a bath in 3 years, how are you going to convince a wealthy person on Wall Street that they are equal? How are you going to convince the person under the bridge that they are equal with the person on Wall Street? How are you going to convince the people in this horrible situation that has taken place in so many towns, but most recently in Ferguson, Missouri? How are you going to convince both of those sides that they are indeed equal?
Or even one. Forget one, just go for equal.
I hear the passion of Bola's heart. He would like to just leave behind all of the stuff that religion led us into, that crippled us, but don't allow religion to turn around again, Bola, and rob you once again. That just because they were the ones who claimed rights over things like the Holy Spirit, Moses, and Jesus, just because they claimed the rights over it, does not mean that the Holy Spirit and Moses and Jesus are there without evidence, because that statement that they are there without evidence just isn't a true statement at all. I really feel your letter. I feel what is happening and what you're going through. And I think one of the most disgusting things that can happen to anybody is to not be heard. So please help us to understand that we are hearing you, because we want to know that, not that we're just giving you answers, but we want to know that we truly are hearing you and hearing you correctly. We love you to pieces.
We sure do, Bola. You know, that little bumper that I do about questions, we want to know your questions, because it's not the people who agree with us, but the people who disagree with us that help us grow. I didn't just say that because I thought it might sound good. I said that because that's exactly where we're at.
Well, it's the truth. It's where we're at. It's where we've been. It's where we come from. So,
and I'm not calling you disagreeable in as much as you disagree with us, but I hope there's more and more people who are prepared to put everything on the line and tell us exactly what they think, because that's the only way we grow. And if we are one, and we are, and if we are equal, and we are, we need each other.
We definitely do, Barris. And that is, I don't want anyone to ever lose sight of that intended result that we're looking for. And I still want to encourage people. See, I think people have a lot of reasons to love the Gospel Revolution, to love me and you and Jeff and what we do. And I think that in our Americanized society, we're hesitant to tell the people we love of any disagreement that we have with them. And but what we're doing is we're really encouraging you from I'm telling you from the depth of everything that's in me. These are the areas and the nuances of where that we're not being clear enough. Either we're not being clear enough to communicate this to you, or we just haven't thought about it. Maybe you've thought about something we haven't thought about yet. This is real for me. These questions are the lifeblood of not just the Gospel Revolution, but these questions, and the questions is to the nuance of what this actually means and what does it actually say. That has been the things that have been the building blocks of where I am today. Everything that I stand on has been thoroughly questioned, and it can be questioned again. So we want to make sure that this is coming across clear, and more than anything, we want to be there for you. This isn't about us teaching you what to think. This is about helping you learn how to think for yourself. We truly mean that. I'm not upset with people taking on different thoughts other than my thoughts and the thoughts of the Gospel Revolution. I don't want to even try to figure out how to stop that from happening, because, you see, I don't want to play a balancing act. to try to keep everyone in line somehow, and also teach you to think for yourself. I would rather suffer the consequences, if there are consequences to people thinking for themselves, that would cause it not to be profitable or a gain for myself or the gospel revolution. I'd rather err on the side of losing you altogether than to try to hold you into a particular what to think, because that's just not what my heart is. It has never been that. So, again, to say we love you. We love you so much. Goodness, I don't know that we could ever communicate that to the degree that it actually is.
I used to be a Christian, but Jesus set me free.
I used to be a Christian, but Jesus set me free. I used to be a Christian, but Jesus set me free. I used to be a Christian, but Jesus set me free. Now Gospel Revolution is home sweet home to me.
Hallo, dit is Marcel Roos van de 24/7 Gospel Revolution radio station from the Netherlands. Don't forget to tune in to myradiostream.com/gospelrevolution, where we stream the gospel 24/7 just for you. This is Marcel Roos, and I'm proud to be a part of the Gospel Revolution.
Gospel Revolution.
And so it is that we must leave you, friends. We love every last one of you, and we especially thank all of you for the financial support that keeps this message of grace and peace going out every week. If you'd like to join those folks in increasing our coverage of the gospel, call our office at area code 321-220-4373 and speak to Jeffrey. If you would like to leave a message for the show, simply telephone me on area code 234-564-0971 and leave your voicemail. Our web address is www.gospelrevolution.com, and we are always up for a Facebook chat at Friends of Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution. Thanks to Marcel Roos in the Netherlands, all the gospel all the time is being broadcast 24/7 at myradiostream.com/gospelrevolution. And so it's good night from myself, Beres Bartlett, from the GR Studios in Nashville, Tennessee, and
it is good night from Michael Williams here in beautiful Houston, Texas. And wishing you guys all the best for the holidays. My goodness, we have just fallen headlong into the holiday season, and here we are. So enjoy it. And now I can, after Thanksgiving, I can enjoy the Christmas music. Starting it after Labor Day is not fun for me. But boy, do we have some great Christmas music. Listen to these words. Oh, my gosh.
Christmas time, all the year around.
Oh, be quiet. That's not the one I'm talking about.
which one?
Oh, there are so many Christmas songs that are just chocked full of the gospel. So listen to them while you're walking through the mall. And you may be very moved by some very old traditions in the Christmas carols. Love you guys. We'll see you next time.
Gospel Revolution, coming straight to you from the studios in Nashville.
Not that one either.
Oh, boy. So remember, just because you're offended doesn't mean you are right. And if you prefer learning how to think to being told what to think, then join us again next week, same time, same channel, where we're going to do the same thing all over again, only
it'll be better.
All they care about is getting money, 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 money. Even retail stores give people more respect than that. I don't understand why we've become so commercialized with religion. What does this have to do with God?
Hey, Benny boy, come and play now.
Miracles, come show us how you do your miracles. Let's take your magic act to hospital. Be a pal. What better place to do some unpaid good for TV space but hospital? Where there's no money and where all you'll get is love.
Bank love.
Where everybody's sick, so they're the ones to pick for God's loving miracle.
You could have 100% success rate.
Kids are there. with nothing else but cancer and despair. Their moms and dads are pulling out their hair.
Real people
waiting there for healing miracles and medical bills to be paid. And here you are, God's healing messenger that drives a big Rolls Royce.
Woo-hoo-hoo!
So have the guts to say that you are all display, or come and give some kids a choice.
Come on, Benny, you're the man, you're the healing man.
Then again, God maybe wants these kids to die in pain.
Hey, that'll preach.
While you live off of your illicit gain, while you claim that you deserve it for some reason that you cannot name. Yes, Christ is real, but Christians are not like the Christ I've come to feel. And so I'll turn my heel on all your BS field. You're just another thief who's not in jail.
Benny boy, Benny boy, come out and play. You gonna have some big fun. You'll even dine in the aisles. Yes, you will.
Pumpkin pie.
Gospel Revolution.